Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Show Recaps Theater presents Movies. So many movies as reviewed for you by your friends at Post Show Recaps. Featuring Grace and Ariel and their incredible movie takes, we hope you enjoy the show.
Hello, welcome back to Post Show Recaps Theater. I am Ariel, and I am so happy to be here. And I am joined by my co-host, as always, my normal woman king. It is Grace Leader. How are you doing?
I'm good. I don't know. Normal? I feel like I'm pretty weird.
Well, because we're not alone, so I'm trying last minute pivot to like, okay, who's the one that's normally here? But yes, this is a special movie, so we wanted to have somebody else come in and help us talk about it. We are joined by Chantal from RHAP. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well, and I'm really happy to be here because it's forced me to go and start seeing movies again.
Yes.
Which mm-hmm. I used to be a movie buff. I used to know every movie that was going on. I work in film and television. Mm-hmm. Like, I used to host Oscar parties. Like, I used to know my stuff. And so, you know, I've really kind of fallen off that wagon. And so this really, I thought it was an excellent film to kind of catapult me back into movie goerdom.
Mm-hmm. So is this the first movie you have seen since the dark time that we do not talk about?
I think so, because I had to send a photograph of my ticket stub to my best friend being like, when did movies be this price?
Yeah, post-COVID inflation.
I was shocked. I'm like, I went to a matinee. What?
Uh-huh. Right. And those are supposed to be the cheaper prices.
Exactly. I mean, full disclosure, Chantal and I were gonna go see this movie together, both being in Toronto. And I bought the ticket, and then Chantal was unable to go at the same time I was going, and I couldn't go the rescheduled time. And I was like, Chantal, get your ticket, you know, if you want. Like, I know how much movies cost. I go every week, I go multiple mm-hmm. times every week. You're like, no, I got it. I was like, okay, all right.
I should have taken you up on it.
You definitely should have. I think I owe you one. Yeah.
You do not owe me at all, but I was definitely shocked when I saw the prices.
Wait till you get to the concession stand.
I just walked straight past the concession
stand. These are our battles.
I don't need popcorn. I got popcorn at home.
I remember what popcorn looks like. I don't need to get that here.
Right?
But yeah, The Woman King, starring Viola Davis and Thuso Mbedu and Lashana Lynch and other people, John Boyega notably, directed by Gina Prince Bythewood. The writers are what got me. I didn't realize until after Maria Bello helped write the story, mm-hmm. Co-writing credit with Dana Stevens. So that was interesting. This is a piece of historical fiction. Like, part of it, you know, is based in real history, and then there are some of these characters obviously are made up, and some of the events.
Historical fiction. Everybody on the internet is telling me that. How dare this be historically inaccurate, Ariel? There's been outrage about how it's not historically accurate, which we definitely don't make that complaint about every other movie. Like, you know, like, well, yeah, that's fine, you know. But this one, historically inaccurate.
I saw that the complaints, and I rolled my eyes hard because I'm like, they are using some truths to build a story. They do this all the time. It's how you make movies. This is what we do here. And the fact that it's being criticized, and I thought it was an excellent opportunity to use some history as a baseline for a story that's being told. And so I don't know how it negates the story that's being told.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's always
racist.
There's always a backlash.
Don't make me say it.
There's always a backlash, unfortunately. Yes, and to both of y'all's points, like, that's just what fiction is, right? Regardless if it's movies, books, TV, like you take a grain of truth or you take a grain of history and then you, you know, you build a story around it. And unfortunately, people on the internet love to come out of the woodwork for certain projects. But it did fairly well. Like, I wouldn't say it was a smash success at the box office, but it did decent. I think the overall total was 42.9 million. So
it's a weird time. It's we kind of come out of the draws of September, and there's a lot of stuff coming out in September. I'm very glad to see like this won the box office for the mm-hmm. week, which is very exciting. There's like a lot of movies. There's a lot of streaming movies that get dropped last week as well. Don't Worry, Darling come out. So I don't know. It feels like it has kicked the door open, I think, a little bit for movie going, but maybe not as much as I was sort of thinking. It would, which has been unfortunate.
Well, for me, it actually brought me back into the movie going experience.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we spent the last couple of years at home watching things from our television, you know, going back to the theater and having that surround sound and like being really taken into a new world. I thought it was a really inviting story, and I was happy to be seeing this movie in the theater. So hopefully as it goes along, like more people want to have the same experience.
Well, the other thing I think is that you talked about having Oscar parties. I do feel like this is, correct me if I'm wrong, Errol, this feels like the first like movie that feels like it's getting like Oscar buzz to a degree, that feels like we're like slowly like walking into Oscar season to a degree where these movies are just going to start to get like buzz about that specifically. This feels like the first one that's like it feels a little bit like Oscar season.
And I think the fact that we're coming into the fall now and people start to look towards the future, it's like, okay, what's going to happen? All of a sudden it'll be the end of the year, you know, with all these holidays that are super backlogged in the, what is it? End loaded. And
backloaded.
End of the year loaded. Backloaded. Thank you. Those are the two words.
Backlogged.
backlog loaded the holidays at the end of the year. So I think people definitely start to get, you know, thinking about the Oscars, because that'll be here before we know it. And now it's like that race of like what's going to come out early enough to keep like consistent buzz versus like what came out too early versus what comes out at the right time. So I think for sure that's always a conversation that starts around
this time. There was a lot of worry that Coda, I think, like had like peaked a little bit too high, and then it started winning the awards at different things and then recaptured its like momentum, which is like a weird just movie Hollywood Oscars thing. But yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, for me, I feel like I'm going to start seeing movies every week. So I was talking to my best friend. I'm like, I gotta get back to being a movie person.
Yeah.
Like,
tell. You know who goes to see every movie? You do.
I'm in.
I joked with Sean Tuchman. I was like, this is my first movie since COVID. Okay, this is going to be my 18th of the week.
Yeah, I was like, don't tell her how many times I've seen just Top Gun, let alone how many movies I've seen like across the year.
In my lifetime, I've seen many, many movies. But
yeah,
in
right.
Years,
we are honored, or I certainly am honored to be just a very, very small piece of why you might get back to where you were before.
Well, I just like, I used to love movies and the magic of movies and seeing movies in the theater. Like, it was something that I did definitely once a week. I would for sure see at least one movie, and I hadn't been doing that in a really, really long time. And so I do want to get back to that version of myself that was really allowing myself to be part of the movie magic.
Yeah. Say hello to that person. So yeah, speaking of movie magic, you said you saw this movie in the theater. What was your overall experience watching it?
Well, the first, like the beginning of it, I was quite taken aback. And then it really allowed me to dive right into the characters and the world that we're kind of being brought into. I personally really enjoyed it. I found Viola Davis captivating. I found actually all the leads in this movie very captivating. And I can see all of them having some sort of Oscar buzz or whatnot, because I thought that everybody was super strong and they were all masterful storytellers. Like I really enjoyed it. I loved it, to be honest.
That's awesome. Grace, what about you?
Yeah, I had the same thought. I thought it was really fun. It's interesting that I think it's, it felt both like a major Hollywood blockbuster and also sort of a movie that you don't get to see much, which is about like a woman led and especially a Black woman led action movie. There's a lot of action. We were just kind of joking about how we're just like sort of like looking at the plot summary And it's like, it's very small. There's not a ton in the plot summary. And I was thinking back to the movie, like, oh, that seems small. But no, I guess there is just like a ton of action in this movie. There's a lot of fight scenes. I think it's a stunning film as well. I think especially seeing it in theaters. And the performances do really stand out. I mean, Viola Davis obviously is like tremendous, I think, as per usual. But I really thought Lashana Lynch was my like standout performance from this movie. And to the point of you saying, Chantel, that like you think that like any of them could sort of get like, you know, award recognition for this. I agree. I think the hard thing will be that, they're sort of competing against each other in a sense, we fighting out amongst themselves. So I imagine only like probably, you know, sort of a lead and a supporting will come out of this. But yeah, I do think you could like run down the whole list of the main cast and probably the women anyway, and probably give any of them a nod. I thought it was really strong. I think the story, again, I think you could probably like when you're like out of it, you could probably feel like it feels a little bit, there's some tropiness to it. I think that we could talk about when we get into the spoiler section in terms of some of the like things that are uncovered throughout the movie. At the same time, because it's like an examination of like culture and people that we don't see in major Hollywood blockbusters a lot, like I think it doesn't feel like that at all. So I just thought this was a really fun film. This is like sort of entering us, ushering us, Ariel, into like the fall of movies. I think a good start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I think I was the character Naoi. What is her? Played by Thuso Mbedu, who at first I was like, I know her from somewhere. I've seen her in something. And then I remembered that I watched The Underground Railroad, the Amazon series. I was lucky enough to see, there was this theater in New York City that was showing it like in theater. So I got to see it, and it was, you know, it was a beautifully shot thing. So I'm glad that I didn't watch it at home. I probably honestly wouldn't have watched it at home. The scene in theater was the reason that I pushed myself to see it.
I think it won the Golden Globe.
Definitely got nominated. I know it won some things. She, I believe, was also nominated. Totally deserved it. So I think for her, seeing her in another thing that was super popular, super mainstream, it was, I selfishly felt happy for her. I was like, yay, look at her. She's doing so good. And she was great. Like, she is in some ways, if not these, one of the emotional hearts of the movie. And it all just worked. There was, you know, there's like one storyline that was not necessarily my favorite, but I think everything that I was supposed to feel something towards and all the incredible actresses that were in it definitely impressed me. And it looked beautiful. The action was great. It was two hours and 15 minutes, you know, probably could have cut out 10 minutes, but it was a wonderful experience. And I'm genuinely glad that it did well, and that it, you know, the fact that it had some of the backlash means that it's doing something and it's affecting people. So that's, you know, in a weird way, it's a good sign.
I agree. If it wasn't like doing well, then the trolls don't come out from under their bridge, you know, to a degree. They only want to take down things when they're being successful and they're good, because it like threatens their like worldview, you know?
So, absolutely. Yeah. One of my other favorite parts about this movie was like all the collective dancing scenes and like the singing and like just like the tribal kind of unity. And like, I thought that all that was really like, it's just so impassioned. And I was just thinking as a person that works in film and television, that like I would have like loved to just be like a continuity extra on this movie, like just in the background. Like, and I'm like, oh my God, I get to watch like them do all these scenes. Like, I really feel that the people that worked on this film must have felt really honored to be part of the experience. It looked like there was just something really monumentous that was being created, and I think that people really appreciated being a part of this movie. That's like, I can feel that in the energy of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I had while watching it, I had a similar, I guess somewhat related thought of just how fun's the wrong word, but how joyous and probably important in some ways it felt being, you know, there on set, being involved in this movie, and like what a wonderful opportunity it is. And I think, yeah, that joy, like you said a little bit, that joy shines through. And I think that's an important part of the movie, because obviously some of it is difficult subject matter and you know, the, I think the joy is important for people to feel, and like all the connection and the idea of like found family, which is something pretty universal in fiction, you know, being applied to this incredible tribe of women. You know, there's a male king, who cares, and you know, some other people, but it's really about the women, the Agoji women. So I guess that's all of our thoughts. We'll get into spoilers now, so spoiler alert if you haven't seen the movie, or if you, you know, I guess if you don't care about being spoiled, as always we welcome you, although we kind of question you a little bit in a friendly way.
If someone could like just make, I know we can't beat the iconic like spoiler music from the Big Brother podcast, mm-hmm. or Rob is a podcast, but if someone could actually make us some like, okay, now we're getting into the spoiler section, uh-huh. that would be great. I would really enjoy that.
It would just be you saying, can somebody please make us? Can somebody please make us? And it's like a remix.
Can somebody please make us? Yeah.
Spoiler music.
Spoiler. Well, I can hear it.
Yep. Making itself.
No. So we won't go that far. We open the movie with a title card, which gives us like a little bit of an info dump. It's like, you know, an exposition dump. That's in some version of the movie, probably some character is telling us this, you know, over voiceover. But basically, this takes place in the West African kingdom of Dahomey during the 1820s. And there is a group of all female warriors called the Agoji, and they are led by General Naniska, who is played by Viola Davis. She's she's the aforementioned woman king. And although I guess like you can argue a little bit, but we'll get to that. So they're basically there up against the Oyo Empire, who is oppressing them. There is the slave trade going on. So there are enslaved people who are being traded both to the Oyo Empire and Europeans. So there's a little bit of like history coming into play. And the king of Dahomey, though, is King Gezo, who is in charge of the women group of warriors. We get to find out but they still work for the king. They're still deferential to the king. And the king is played by our friend from the Star Wars universe, or, you know, I think he doesn't like to talk about it, but what's his name? John Boyega. And he's the king. So basically we get into the story and we find, you know, all the people who are, all the women who are Agoji warriors, they give up. It's very like the people on the wall in Game of Thrones. They give up their lives, their titles, their, you know, their families. Most of them, you know, have either given up their families already or been dropped off by their families. The other character that we meet is Thuso Mbedu's character. She plays Naoi, and she's kind of like our eyes into the world of the Agoji tribe. And basically through plot machinations, we learn that there was a time where Viola Davis's character was captured and raped violently by men, and we find out that they're from the Oyo Nation, and Naoi turns out to be her child, and through a very cool like let's make sure that this is actually my child way that I think was really cool to see and was like actually kind of fun in a way, because at first you're kind of like, is this her child? Are they going to leave it that it's open-ended? Does it matter? I think ultimately it didn't matter, but I'm kind of glad that they come out on one side. And then Naoi is captured. And then at the end of the movie, there has to be this mission where they save Naoi, you know, from the people who basically want to sell her off to the Europeans. I think that's the gist. Obviously, it's much more nuanced than that, but that's like the gist of like the skeleton of the story.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
And then I think the other important character is Lashana Lynch's character, who plays Izogi, and she is like the emotional... She is, I think, Naoi's emotional touch point to the group. She's her mentor that she ends up losing in a very emotional scene.
Yeah, I think that for me, like, I think, you know, the main thing is Naoi is sort of... goes on sort of this hero's journey to a degree of she, you know, you talked about people who get dropped off. Her father does come be like, well, she's not suitable for any like husband. She like slaps one of the guy who's like offered, she's offered to because
very
like,
deserving,
very deserving. Yeah, it was great. She is like not, you know, she's refusing to just like marry him or be subservient to him basically. And so she gets dropped off and it's like her sort of entering, you know, there's this like interesting thing that they do where like there's a specific, first of all, citizens can't really look at the Egoji. And there's this very cute scene. And I think that one of the things I think this film does really well is that Chantel, like this could feel very like spectacle in nature, like a little bit like, you know, just the eyes of looking at people, that this idea, like you can't look at them, but it does feel like very cute. And it feels like you could tell that the Egoji are very like special, even in this culture, in a way that doesn't feel, I'm trying to like, you know, figure out how to say this exactly, but it feels like there's reverence for these people, and they immediately, without really, it feels like ever like banging you over the head that like, look, they're like female warriors. They're just kind of like cool badass warriors. I don't know if that makes sense, but that's how I was feeling.
Well, like when they were kind of walking in, we saw like the little boy and he was, you know, not allowed to look, but he was kind of looking through his eyes. And I believe it was Izogi comes over and he kind of, you know, scares him at first, but realizes like chuckles with him after that, like it's actually okay. Like I did like that moment. I did like the fact that they weren't supposed to be looked at because they offered so much power, and you know, I was going along with the ride for the story. I was down with it. I definitely felt like just like even how they walked and the presence that they were just giving off with each step. The casting was just done so well, and just like the power that they did exude, it was palpable. I enjoyed it, I appreciated it, and I went along with the idea that they weren't allowed to be looked at.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think for me, what made like the warmth that you alluded to, Grace, like I think that's what makes it a little bit different from some of these, you know, some of these like warrior groups that we've seen in the past, certainly male for the most part warrior groups that we've seen in the past, of like they're supposed to be hard and they're supposed to be, you know, cold, and for her to kind of play against that, that subvert that expectation a little bit by then being warm to that child, like you said, Chantel, I thought was like not just like a sweet moment that makes you laugh, but also important to establish the connection that they have to this community that they basically protect.
I definitely cried quite a few times in this movie. Aww. Personally. Yes. Mm-hmm. That's one thing I do like about movie going experiences is that I appreciate being taken into a story and feeling the connection emotionally. So they got me, they hit my heartstrings for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the warmth is a good point earlier about like, yeah, that they are, they all do have this connection. Like I love, and so what I was saying is now we sort of on this hero's journey that she's going to be dropped off and do a Egoji training in hopes that she can become a member. She's not a member at the beginning of the movie of the Egoji and has to go through this training where you basically have to like, you know, survive sort of and like, you know, be willing to like finish this like sort of like obstacle course that, which is like brutal. An obstacle course is like putting it lightly, like literally running through like thorn branches, like cutting
the
their
thorn
leg.
Bush. I was like, yeah. No, but like I would have been done at the thorn bush. I feel like everything else, I could maybe perhaps get to a point where I could handle it. Maybe, but the thorn bush, I don't know. Like, I think that's the bridge too far or the bush too far for me. I don't know that I can.
And so Egosi is sort of the, you know, one in charge of, like, you know, training. And I do think, like, she's hard on Anaui, but also hard on her because she knows that she could, like, do it. And you know, the fact that they bond so well, that their relationship grows so much over the course of the film, along with Anaui, along with the other, like, women who she's training with. I just thought this was, like, yeah, pretty, you know, it's, you know, again, where I was talking about it being tropey is like, yeah, she gets dropped off, has to go through this thing. Is she going to, you know, they kind of like don't believe that she could do it at the beginning. And then, of course, she's able to do it. But, like, I don't know. Isn't that just movies? Why would I, you
it's
know?
Exactly. There's only seven stories, right? Like, we see seven stories being told over and over and over and over again. Right. Like, why are we surprised that we're not going to have a pretty good understanding as to what is most likely going to happen in this story that we're being told, especially an epic story like this? You know, as you're saying, Grace, a hero's journey, like, you know what the hero's journey is. It's like hero's journey, meet its teacher, it fails at its task, then has to go on the dark night of the soul and comes around. And in the end, like, they become revered. Like, that's the story, one of the seven. So I'm fine with it. One little button that I liked that happened is, in the beginning, when she was in her training with the rope, and she thought the rope was stupid, she wanted to have a knife. And Viola Davis's character comes over and, like, gives her sword, and she can't even carry it because it's so heavy. But then at the end, you see how she's able to masterfully use the rope to be able to, like, really take care of some of these men that she was fighting. So I did like the full circle of, you know, her snubbing the rope, and then in the end seeing its value and its importance.
Yeah, because it didn't seem like anybody else was using the rope in that way, so it made it even more special. And I agree, it was kind of like, what is she going to do with the rope? Do we care? Is the rope just gone now? Are we never going to see the rope again? And she becomes that, like, vicious character in the first Kill Bill movie that's, like, using, like, the ball at the end of the chain in, like, a really cool way, where she's kicking it around and, like, using the, you know, putting a knife at the end of it, but also kind of using the rope itself as a weapon. It's super effective and just, like, a fun in movies like these, for me personally anyway. Sometimes the action can be, and I think we've been certainly with the marvelization of everything, you know, with these Marvel movies, sometimes the action is a little hard to follow. Obviously, this didn't have any CGI that I could clock, which is great. So it was, but still, like, fight choreography is a big part of these scenes either working or not working. And I thought it worked beautifully, and it was super, super intense and super hard to watch at times, where you're just like, you know, people are gonna get hurt, obviously, because they're fighting each other and they're all human. And then they do that thing where, for the most part, sometimes, like, people that you don't know are getting hurt, and you're like, yes, it wasn't somebody I like, but also, sorry, I didn't know you. I hope you were good.
I do think, I said at the beginning that I think there are ways in which this movie is tropey, but it doesn't feel tropey. Like, I think if we sit back and are saying, you know, yeah, that it is the hero's journey. But then I do think the point about the rope, it is kind of like a way in which, like, because I feel like I'm always watching a movie a little bit like that, and then being like, you know, if I'm like, oh, that was fun, you know, cool, you know, and the rope, I think, especially a part of that. One of the things that I felt was perhaps, you know, the most trouble is like that, the fact that Naniska is her ends up being her mother. You alluded to this earlier, you know, that, like, of course they have this, like, connection that goes deeper than just the fact that, like, they are sort of antagonistic toward, you know, it's like the person in charge with, like, the new up and comer who's, like, doing things a little bit differently. That it ends up being like, oh, but actually, like, that's her mother, you know, in a way feels right. But I do think the, like, reveal of how they confirm that it happened, not only does that just have emotional stakes of, like, the fact that she was kidnapped and raped, and that's how she has this baby, and the complications, I think, that come with that as well, of knowing, and there's a lot of that stuff we could talk about in this movie as well, of there's a scene very early on where somebody is of the Oya Empire, and someone tries to be like, well, you know, why are you in the Egoji? And this other I think it's, we haven't talked about her yet, but Sheila Tim, who plays Amenza, who is sort of like Naniska's right hand woman, is like, hey, that's where I'm from too. Like, you know, once you're here, you're here, that you're in, that there's all these, like, layers to it that make it, you know, the tropiness, like, I think, goes away. But yeah, the scene where they reveal how she knows that it's her daughter, which is that when she was a baby, she cut, put a shark's tooth inside of her. And this birthmark that she has, I think she calls it a devil's mark, her father had called it. We found out she's adopted, reveals she
opens it up and finds there's a shark tooth in there, confirm all but confirming that, like, yeah, that's, you're my daughter, you're my mom.
I was gonna say, I love that whole moment, you know, because we knew that they had to have some sort of connection with each other. Like, what was gonna happen? Was she gonna take her on as a daughter, even though the kind of the whole thing was putting aside any emotional attachments that you have to people, because like having feelings and loving someone that actually made you weak, apparently. And so you knew that there was gonna be some sort of a love connection between these two women in this particular movie. And so seeing this whole happen, I was like, oh, this is great. This is great. So now they both have to kind of overcome this whole, like, we're not supposed to care about somebody, but then we do. And so I thought it was satisfying that she's having to see these people overcome what they've kind of pushed away and pushed aside for their whole lifetime. And then obviously just in, what's the young character's name?
Naoi.
Yeah. You know, with her like newly coming into this, but having to decide to put aside her feelings of love and stuff like that because it makes her weak. So I thought I did enjoy seeing both these characters needing to overcome this, but they couldn't really because they have the bond of blood.
Yeah, because I, you know, obviously she's metaphorically becomes her mother, right? Because now she's like the general of this group that she's joining. But the fact that she's her biological daughter, there's like this point in the movie where before she literally cuts out the tooth from Naoi's shoulder, there's a period of time where she's not 100% sure. She has now found out that that Naoi was adopted and she saw a scar on her shoulder, so she's wondering about that, if she could be. And I love that period of time because you're like, okay, do I want this? Like, just as a viewer, selfishly, like, what do I want from the story? Do I want her to actually be her daughter? Would I like that? Because then I'm like worrying if it's going to like affect my, I think ultimately in like less capable hands, I would have hated it. But honestly, like Viola Davis's emotional reactions in this movie to a lot of things, not just this, but this particularly, so strong and visceral as usual. She's incredible, like coldest take ever. It's what sells it. You're like, wow, I just believe it. It doesn't matter whether I like it or not. I believe it. And it's great.
And I think to the point of Chosen Family, there's enough also in there that this movie is not just about Naniska and Naoi. It's about Naoi's relationship with Zogi. It's about Naniska's relationship with Amenza. It's about all of the people that Naoi goes through like training with and becomes a Goji with them, that there's enough like also in there about Chosen Family. And that's this group of people who have each other's backs and love each other no matter what, that sort of, it kind of doesn't really even matter whether it's, she's officially her daughter, like you were saying earlier, Ariel, because there's so much, you know, these women all have so much respect for each other. I also really like, I'm kind of a sucker for when the young gun teaches the old dog a new trick, to call Viola Davis an old dog. I'm so sorry, Viola, if you're listening.
Call her that at one point. So I'm an old woman. So, true. You know, following suit.
Which is during the final challenge. This is actually, I don't know if this final challenge was better than the challenge's final challenge or not.
I didn't go watch it, but from what
I
heard,
it was weird when they had to eat a full onion. That was weird when they had to do that.
The full onion in the theater while you were watching.
That's right. Yeah. I don't bring popcorn is too expensive.
Too strong. Yeah.
I bring a full onion and garlic.
I'm not getting the popcorn. I just happen to have an onion in my bag.
Yeah. I know you guys normally have popcorn flavoring. Do you have onion flavoring? Which is flavoring for my onion.
You have like popcorn flavored onion.
That's right. Okay, I'm getting off track. Which is, she goes back and helps her friends. She goes back and she still is comes out first. And they're kind of talking about like, how dare you go back? There's also this like, you know, the theme of like that we, you know, you have to follow commands and orders as well. And so when they go to Naniska wants to chop the head off of, I think his name is Obaid, the like general of the Oya tribe, and she doesn't follow the plan specifically because she wants to lure him in and fight him. She goes, you know, and so there's this whole thing of like she's kind of doing the same. I think she ends up going back as well. So Viola Naniska learning tricks from Naoi about like, yeah, you have to follow orders, but also sometimes not following orders means you can help like someone else in like a time of need, and you're stronger together in that way. I just thought like that was really, it's like one of my favorite tropes as well. Yeah, the young gun, like having the trick that will work, you know.
Yeah, and the older person respecting the younger person enough to actually think that the thing that they taught them will be useful. No, I agree. I love that thing too. And here, the idea that not just is she new, but they have that blood connection, as we've been saying. So, like, the idea that she would affect her more, like, Naniska's number two is like kind of questioning her at one point, and she says, like, listen, I would never question you openly in front of the others, but you're acting crazy. Like, you're the one that didn't go on the plan. So the idea that Naniska is acting in a way that she never has before, because now she's in a situation that she could have never been in before, because she's basically meeting her daughter, is super, super powerful and like potent.
Well, and then it also replays itself again at the very end, because she goes against the king. Like, she decides to go back, bring her friends back, bring her daughter back. And actually, in the end, instead of being reprimanded for it, because she thought that she was going to have to give back the sword and step down from her position, in the end, she gets revered now. And now she is the woman king. And so what she was kind of reprimanding her daughter for in the beforehand, and then she was being reprimanded with her second in command. Now she did learn that, you know what, maybe it is a good thing to go back for our loved ones that we leave behind, being that defiant person. And then you do end up being revered in the end. So it kind of came full circle a couple of times, I think.
Mm-hmm. Ariel, can I take a guess? You said there's one storyline.
I know what it is too. I know what it is.
I was trying to get through as much of like all the good stuff that we loved.
No, let's sandwich it right in the middle. Right. My guess is that it's the Malik stuff, the Malik and Santo stuff.
Yeah, I just. Yeah.
Which is also, I will say, where the film, I think that is also. I don't think just from people who are just trying to be and cut down the film. This is where I think the film is getting some critique about slave trading and the way people are involved. And like, for me, it's like, I don't know, whatever. It's a Hollywood film. I don't know. Shanta, I don't know if you, I don't mean to like put this immediately on you, but because Malik is like involved in the slave trade to a degree, but also he redeems himself at the end by like freeing the slaves to ultimately kill Santo. But I don't know. What did you think of this love storyline here in the middle?
I mean, I'm a slight sucker for a little bit of a love story, a little bit of a star-crossed lovers type vibe. And so you knew it was coming. Like, you knew it had to happen, because she's already been told that, you shouldn't be looking at men. Like, you shouldn't, have any sort of hearts for anybody else. And so I had an idea that she was going to fall for somebody, and she wasn't going to be allowed to be with that person. So I was expecting it. And obviously when he came around, I'm like, oh, it's that guy. Okay. I see that this storyline is going to play out here. It didn't fully bother me. I think that they kind of needed somebody like him to make the ending of the movie kind of work. And so I was okay with it, but I 100% knew that that was the area of the movie that you're kind of like, I could maybe have used like without it, but I didn't mind it.
Yeah, because I think, honestly, ultimately, my biggest gripe with it is just that the actor who plays Malik is like, I'm sorry, but just like not in the same league at all as these incredible actresses that we're getting, you know, as the main
Jordan
characters
Boulder,
of the movie.
I'm so sorry, Jordan.
I'm so sorry.
Like, he's so cute.
No. I mean, he looks amazing. Like, I love it when it's like still showing me the picture. I love that he's a lot, you know, what is this, like 1820, whatever year we said, and he's like,
yeah,
his body is like, it would have been impossible for him to look like that, like at that time in history, because like people just weren't shaped that way, but whatever, it was very entertaining. He's just his story, and you know, to his credit, it's not just the writing just felt a little bit more thin there for his character. And I think that's, you know, I'm not saying I want more of him. Like we needed more of him in the movie. I'm just saying it didn't feel as important to the movie. Just like, okay, he has to check a box a little bit. Like you were saying, Chantel, and I understand. I like that there was an extra layer of narrative for Naoi. I just, he wasn't worthy of her as far as I'm concerned. So it didn't feel like super impactful for me.
Well, I think that there's an interesting thing here. It does kind of feel like a network note to be like, okay, you gotta have Malik. You gotta have like the love interest, except that it does feel like sort of the 2022 network note. This film is, I believe the writers and creators have said that they drew a lot on like Braveheart and Gladiator. And although this is like, this feels like such a modern sort of version of those movies, what I was saying at the beginning, that does kind of feel like a Hollywood blockbuster in many senses. I think that if like this movie, even if it gets made 20 years ago, which it probably doesn't because it has like an ensemble black female, cast. But specifically, like if 20 years ago, this movie is centered on Na'Vi and just Na'Vi, even more than Viola Davis, that like this love story, they end up like together and they leave and they're like, you know, it's so much more. I feel like what I can kind of respect about the film is even though it's in there as sort of this emotional beat, and I actually think that Malik's character is interesting. I think he's also a victim of like the slave trade. His mother gets taken from Dahomey and right. he is born as a result of her being a slave and taken. Mm-hmm. But that the movie kind of like lets this thing happen of like, yeah, there's clearly is like some at least chemistry there. She's very like strong. I love when she's in the bedroom and he comes in and he unlocks the door and she's like, oh, so now you own me. And I like that consistently. She's like, this is still not okay. Like in a, like this relate until you just actually like, or something. He then gives her the key. And she's sort of free from there, that because like this idea that he like sort of buys her freedom, right, still creates a kind of a weird power dynamic between them. And so I kind of like that the movie never to me really like goes there with them. It kind of like lets it just be what it is and never is like, and they have a passionate steamy nights together and then, you know, and then she leaves. It's kind of just I think they did
because wasn't she just wearing like the like something wrapped around herself?
Well, but I just assumed that was her sleeping.
There was a point where like I couldn't tell ultimately. Like it makes me feel better that there is even like a discrepancy about it, because it seemed like they hadn't, but then
I thought they had.
They were
okay. Well,
something.
Then it's not like a scene. It's not like a like. Right, okay, like, here's the like.
Which I don't need.
To the hand on the window, like
right, right. Ooh, and then the end of the movie
it's literally
is
literally
like,
steamy in here.
He lets her like she is like, all right, later, like bye. I'm going back to do the thing that I'm doing, which is like being with these women, being a warrior. So I don't know. It's like, I agree. It's not like my favorite thing in the movie. It's probably actually my least favorite thing in the movie, but I am like a little bit like, I think it's better than it could have been. Maybe that's like a really low bar, but I don't know.
No, I think for sure it's not like it ruined the movie, right? Like I think again, in like less capable hands, it's like, wow, this thing is so dragging the movie down potentially for if you have a problem with it. But I think the fact that he is his tale is a little bit complicated. Not his actual tale. He's not.
Yeah, I missed that.
The tale.
That's
the
why they had to cut out the
T-A-L-E. His narrative, of his mother being from there and like the emotional complications of what that would mean and what that would feel like, and especially in light of his mother has passed and her last dying wish was that he seemingly either return there or get to know this place where she's from. I think definitely gives it emotional weight, and he's not some like, you know, white savior person coming in to be like, I'm going to solve your problems for you and I am interested in you romantically. It definitely keeps it on this side of, it's more interesting to me for sure than it could have been.
I found the wife a little bit like, all right, it's in here. That's fine. I guess he has many wives.
The queen, not queen.
Yeah, who like desperately wants to be named woman queen.
I don't understand what's happening with that whole dynamic, because like, why does she have so much attitude? Like she seems like she's living like a pretty good life. Like she doesn't have to go out and fight. And like, she's just painting.
Jealous. She seems like she would love to play the Game of Thrones. Like she's just, yes. She wants to be in the way that she wants to be affecting the king, or like infecting rather the king with like her ideas. And like, this is a better idea than what you're thinking. And you don't want to seem weak. Like she's like whispering in his ear in a way that's very signaling like we don't like her. Like right away, the movie's like, you're not really supposed to like her.
mm-hmm.
And she's the one, she's one of many wives, we should say, of the king, but she's the only one that seems to be causing friction, I guess you can say, for the king, and specifically in the sense that her and Naniska don't get along, because she seems to be jealous of Naniska's organic way of talking to the king, because the king respects her opinion, so he looks to her to help him make decisions, and he doesn't respect his wife in that same way, so she's jealous, and we don't like her because of that.
Definitely wasn't a fan. I was like like, get out of here. Like, you're just like, why don't you look at this woman and see what she actually is bringing, and then like, you know, have something to say. I don't know. But like, I obviously we need that character as well. Like, it's as we've mentioned before, it's a pretty tropey film. And so you definitely need to have that, the wife that's jealous of the other kind of wife, not real wife. Anyways, you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, no. And to that point, I'm glad that it wasn't like, she was jealous of her, of like the king potentially being romantically interested in Naniska. Like, even if that hadn't been true, that she's like so blind to why he would be interested in her. That's like the bad version of this. So I'm definitely glad we didn't get that.
True.
So yeah, I get, and his friend, Malik's friend, is like even worse. Like, I don't even want to. He's like literal trash.
The guy gets drowned he gets drowned, so that's pretty cool.
He gets drowned at the end. Mm-hmm. One thing we should mention is they do this interesting thing, and this has come up. I can't remember the last time we spoke about this, Grace, but there was some other movie where like they do a thing with language where they're speaking English, but you're meant to understand that they're not within their universe, they're not speaking actual English. They're speaking their, you know, native language.
I've referenced that Vikings does this, that every time two characters speak the same language or in the same scene, they speak English, but you're supposed to sort of assume that they are speaking Norse or whatever. And so then when somebody who speaks French enters, everybody starts speaking their own language to suggest that they don't actually speak the same language. I think the movie does this, they do this as well, of anytime it's just people who speak the same language, they're speaking English, but you're sort of supposed to presume that they would be speaking whatever language they're actually speaking. Yeah.
Yes. And I think it's Santo is the name of the character.
Yeah.
I think at one point King Gezo is like, speak my language, because King Gezo knows Portuguese because he's royal and he has an education and he's intelligent. But he's like, no, 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 you're in my kingdom, so you speak my language. But they're just speaking the, African accented English that they kind of speak for a lot of the movie. But I will say the cool thing that they do at least is when they're a lot of this chanting that we were talking about at the beginning of like, especially the Agoge women have their like chants. There's like a call and response component to it. That is all actually in their language, so I appreciated that we did have examples of that and it wasn't just English the whole time.
Not only did Lashana Lynch, like, we haven't really talked about Lashana Lynch much, I think you referenced it, that her character does die, Azogi dies in the rescue attempt. Not only does she just have all of these really great emotional acting scenes, but the scenes, I guess she's acting the whole time, but the scenes where she's leading the chants, I'm just like, God, it's so cool. It's like, she's so badass. Lashana Lynch in this movie,
badass,
it's so awesome. Yeah,
when she, like, how she ends up dying with the shot, I literally screamed.
She goes back. She goes back for Na'vi. Oh, right?
Yeah, yes. And I was like, aghast, and audibly gasped, and I think I had some tears at that moment. And I was like, no.
Yeah,
can't happen now. But we kind of skimmed over it because you're not a fan of him. But so this guy, he's Rafe Fiennes' nephew.
Yeah, he's Hero Fiennes Tiffin.
So wow, Hero Fiennes Tiffin. Cool. I see that now.
He played a young Lord Voldemort as well.
I will say, you know, to his credit, I really believed that he was a piece of shit. So, you know, that's acting too. that's not nothing. Yeah, and I think the fact that he, you know, again, like I said, you feel so much towards him and he gets his comeuppance. Like, he has a function because he's the farthest along on that spectrum that Malik is looking at. He's like, okay, do I want to be that person? Obviously not. Or do I want to do what I think is right, which is to help these people, to help my mother's people, basically, who are my people my by extension, right? my mother's people. It's you know, again, he's serving a purpose of the other character looking at him and saying, you know, again, I don't want to be that person. But
he's the villain. He's pretty much the conflict is all like internal, internal conflict. Like you can't personify it. He's the closest we get. He basically represents the slave trade.
the Oba.
Oh, and Oba. Man,
I guess the general from the Oyo kingdom.
That's also her father, correct? Presumably,
I believe we're supposed to presume that.
Yes, we're led to believe that he could possibly be her father for sure, because she. Yes, I think that's an important piece that I'm glad the movie didn't really waste any time trying to get Naniska to. Trying to get Naoi to understand that from Naniska's suspicion of that being true, like that was just a thing that we knew and that Naniska knew, and we don't really like need to get into that because that's like a little messy as far as the narrative.
Yeah, the one, I mean, again, I don't mean to like, am I placating the trolls here by talking about like this or like the thing that Viola Davis has come out to be like, yeah, it's fiction, is that Gezo doesn't in real life, he does talk about potentially stopping the slave trade, but he ultimately does not stop the slave trade. He's then assassinated a few years, I think in the 50s he's assassinated. And so that's one of the critiques that like, oh, you're like, you know, pretending that they stopped the slave trade when they didn't. And it's like, because the story is, you know, as Viola Davis said, that like if we wanted a completely accurate version of this movie, you'd go watch a documentary. Unfortunately, people would not have paid millions of dollars. You know, this movie made $40 million at the box office to go watch a documentary on the Goji. It's just like not, you know, this is sort of how we get our media. And everybody should know that, like, you know, it's edu entertainment to a degree that like, is there education here? Like, yes, but also nobody's taking this or should be taking this as like, well, that's exactly what happened. I can't believe John Boyega was king and
wow.
1820s. He must be very old. Right. So but I
like,
don't know.
Yeah. Use it as a springboard to like you're fascinated by the storyline, be like, right. Hey, like, okay, like if it's based on truth, I love things that are based on history, based on truth. Mm-hmm. I think that's also really interesting. So I would want to do a deep dive and be like, okay, where are the facts here? Like, how are they weaving all the facts in with telling a story? And so do people forget how movies are made? Like, it's just so confusing to me. And they're not even trying to be a specific depiction of something that happened, like completely, like exact. Like, they're not even saying that they're trying to do that. So the fact that people are expecting it to be that is quite odd.
It's just it's a nicer story. I mean, I don't mean
beautiful, yeah. And it's like it's somewhat like aspirational in a way, like in or you know almost. Yeah, more aspirational certainly than inspirational, but I think to end the story the way you wish it had gone, there's power in that, you know? There's power in like let's write the ending that we didn't get, regardless of what the genre is, you know? I think I don't know, I think there's beauty in that.
There's a movie I watched recently that I want to put, but it does something like that where instead of saying like this is based on a true story, it's like this is an interpretation of like potential feminist, something like that, that was just like, yeah, like the story's going to end in a way that like feels good for us. And like, yeah, we basically don't have to like be true to the historical facts. Like, you know, unless you're like totally betraying the idea, like, and again, I think the other piece of this is like, oh, I didn't end the slave is I think a little bit too, I'm going to speak on behalf of all white people, everybody, which is that I think that it's not up to us to decide when black history, how black stories are, like how people choose to then take them and interpret them in terms of like, if you know, I don't think it's fair for us to be like, well, actually he never stopped the slave trade, you know, like I just don't think, you know, to my point about like Malik, that he is a complicated figure in this because he's a victim of the slave trade himself while being involved in the slave trade. And so I don't think it's fair for like me as a white person to then pass judgment on like, you know, if he was an actual person and there are people like him, like how he navigated through a world of racism. So anyway.
Agreed.
Yeah. I think I'm trying to think of what else we didn't get to. We talked about the tooth.
The very
which,
end.
Honestly, yeah. the tooth, just to go back to the tooth for a second, is that like realistic? Is that reasonable to expect that like she would have grown? I know it would have like scarred over, but I don't know.
Well, good news, Ariel. When we first podcasted, I put a little shark tooth in your just to make sure if you ever, you know, I just needed to make sure it was always you.
So
if I ever time traveled, I needed a way to make sense.
I was questioning the like it being possible, but I'm thinking back in that day, being sending a child to an orphanage, I just don't think that they would have had that much care about it and like and really looked at it and like, oh, let me figure out what it is. And so I think that they would probably just have maybe covered the wound and made it heal without like really investigating there. So I'm going to just fall into the story and allow it to be completely possible. But I did question it when I was watching it. I'd be like, how can they do that? But
I agree. I think that, yeah, I just am like, all right, yeah, she got shark tooth in her in the back of her room. I just very quickly, I think that that's the scene at the last scene of the movie when they sort of like walk away from each other, not really like perfectly knowing what the relationship is going to be like. And then there's this festival and now he comes up and asks Naniska, like, will you dance with me? And when she goes over and they just like are dancing together, and Viola Davis, who said this very like, you know, she's like uptight, right? She's very strict and stern and serious all the time. And I love the choice not to really see her face. Like, and again, I think for me, a little, it's like, yeah, that's like their like, the Goji Wars, this is their moment to just be like happy and together and like we're watching it. And so just seeing her like dance from behind in this very cute, adorable way with like all the women like watching, I just thought it was like such a beautiful like end. I think often endings are really hard. Sometimes I'm watching a movie and I'm like, that's it. And then it'll like fade to black. It'll open again, like a field. And you're like, okay, no, it's an epilogue. I just thought this was like a beautiful, beautiful like last scene of the movie.
Yeah, I was worried. I was like, uh-oh, wait, she's asking her to dance. I'm like, please. Like, I've really been enjoying this movie so far. I was just getting really worried that how they were going to handle this dance question. And I think that they handled it perfectly. So I did have a little heart palpitation there. I'm like, don't start dancing in the way that I'm thinking that you might dance right now.
Oh, no. Yeah, they're going to like contemporary dancing. Yeah, or worse, bad dancing.
She just danced? Like,
no. Viola. No, Viola's done such a good job until now. Don't make her dance in a way that she doesn't want to.
I did say the last scene. There was a mid-credits scene.
I did see that,
which is I think for a gozy, but I my brain is broken every time a movie is ending. I'm like, god, I better check if there's a post credit scene. And it was like, yeah, there is one. Yeah,
I had the same thought. I was walking out, I was like, is there gonna be a post credit scene? And I was like, don't even Google it, just walk out. Like, your brain, to your point, like you just said, Grace, like my brain is broken, but I'm not gonna let it control me.
Like, stop making me watch the credits.
Oh god, what happened? They're like, then she started like
flossing, and then she dabbed and she flossed. Yeah, no, it's just like a little I think
back,
Zemi like is doing a little funeral ceremony scene for Igozi. Yeah. So it doesn't like set up a sequel or anything. Like, it doesn't, you know, it's just,
I mean,
like
it could. Maybe it was could. Like witchcraft and like we're gonna bring back her spirit. Like,
right, instead of Gozi, a Zogi. Yeah, it's like Amenza's doing like this little, there's like a tribute thing to Zogi. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so right. At the end, though, sweet, the thing with the whiskey being like the only thing that European man brought that was worth anything. I was like, yeah, that's probably makes sense. I'm not a big whiskey person myself, but I get it. We all have our things.
Have you tried 1820s whiskey?
Right, hey, a very good year apparently. to what I alluded to earlier, I guess I just briefly, there was this idea as I was watching the movie of like, okay, the woman and ultimately, you know, literally King Gezo names Naniska the woman king, so it's like his non-romantic partner equal that will help him rule, and obviously she has control over the Igoji, the army. But I was like, oh, is this, while the movie was going, before we got to the end, like, are we setting up some kind of Niwa being like the actual titular woman king because she's the daughter of Naniska, and like perhaps like a sequel thing? But it seems like the movie never really goes there, which I didn't need it, but you know, it was a thought like, oh no, does that mean Aniska's gonna die? Like my brain starts to go a little, I get a little ahead of myself.
I thought about that myself. I was just thinking about like, oh, in Succession, like she's gonna be the new Woman King. So I wasn't sure if that was gonna happen. But then I was looking at the time, I'm like, no, I think we're good here.
Right. Yeah. If they were gonna kill her, she would have died already. They're not gonna make her dance and then kill her in the middle of the dance.
Exactly.
That's what we don't want.
I don't know. Do you think there's a sequel? There's kind of like a little bit of buzz about like, you know, perhaps a Woman King, a sequel. I think because we don't get a lot of these type of stories, it's hard for me to be like, no, like I don't need, you know, it feels like we don't often get sequels to like these biopic-y type thing, but this is action biopic-y. So maybe.
So I guess Ariel, you would not want to see the life of Malik and.
Where's the somebody get me the what I want, like the movie to be clear, I really don't want this. This would be the only time I would want this, like to be able to fast forward at an actual movie theater. Like right. I think that it's a little bit sacrilege to the movie theater experience, but I think in this case we can make an exception and just say maybe I can watch it on like 2x or 3x, you know, watch it like a quick like a 1 hour some, you know, super episode movie.
Sometimes we do how quickly will it be before, like how long will it be before you watch this movie, which for you it sounds like most of this movie you'd watch pretty soon except for all the scenes with Malik. Just skip them.
Yeah, maybe I skip. Maybe. Oh, poor sweet Fine's nephew.
I heard Mari talking about she was reading the Game of Thrones book. She went back and read them in like her own machete order, and you just have a machete version of the Woman Ooh. King where it just doesn't involve Malik.
Yeah,
there we go.
I like that. Yeah. I mean, again, no offense to him, he did great. It was really the rain, whatever. I've stepped into too much already. I'm not gonna adjust that anymore. But yeah, I think I would see this again for sure. You know, at home, if I saw that this was on, you know, at some point it's gonna be on whatever streaming, channel yeah. they rerun these things on way after streaming. And if I saw it on TV, I'd be like, oh yeah, let me check this out. What part is it up to? I think, you know, I had a good enough experience with it. And the nitpicking that I did, it was like, it didn't sully, to use another Game of Thrones reference, it didn't sully my experience of it. So I think that's good.
I was also impressed by the fact that, if I'm not mistaken, it was directed by a woman, which, mm-hmm. you know, with all these, some of these really graphic fight scenes, mm-hmm. I wouldn't necessarily think a woman would be directing it. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, I was pretty pleased and impressed that a woman did take on the reins of such an epic kind of biopic. It doesn't usually happen. So it was cool to see.
It's pretty much screenplay, a story directed. It's a pretty big woman ensemble cast. It's not a man in that bunch. So no,
pretty impressive.
It's pretty impressive. I'm trying to think. I think that's most of the movie. Is there anything? I don't think there's much.
No, I don't think there's any more. Yeah,
to talk about. Chantel, is there anything else that you have seen, whether it's like TV or movies or, you know, new old, that you super liked or made an impression, or after that, what else do you have going on?
I'm like, no, I have been so out of the loop. Well, mm-hmm. the thing that happens with me is that, like, I feel like I need to do like TV series justice. So like if I miss the boat of something, and I usually mm-hmm. can't jump on the boat because I'm like, oh, everybody's hyping it up, I can't watch it now. And then like I miss the boat. And then I'm like, oh, now I have to go and watch this stupid, you know, series. And then I have to like kind of go all the way to the beginning and watch it. And so that sometimes deters me from end up catching up to like some of these things that I quote unquote should watch. So mm-hmm. I've kind of been avoiding catching up on things. Right. But in the future.
Right. And then there's room to be disappointed. You catch up on something, you're like, that wasn't even worth it. Why did I even do that?
Well, like on my catch up list is oh my gosh, why am I forgetting the name of this? But the drug one, and he's making the drugs in the
better Narcos, Breaking Bad.
Breaking Bad, like that's mm-hmm. one that like I saw like the first three episodes.
You got catch up to Breaking Bad. I see. Yeah, this is indicative.
Better Call Saul, the spinoff.
It's like that. Even Game of Thrones, I've only seen season one, which I feel terribly about. But then I'm like, now I can't watch House of Dragons because I feel like I need to watch all of.
Yeah, Breaking Bad ended 9 years ago. I love that you're like, hey, catch up. I really gotta catch up.
Sopranos is another one that I haven't caught.
I think of this, I do really admire like the viewpoint that you have, Chantel, that seems to be, it's not that you're like, oh no, I haven't seen, like some people are like, oh, have you seen it? You're like, no, I haven't seen, I haven't saw it. You're like, oh, I haven't caught up yet. I haven't caught up to watch. I'm just like behind on Breaking Bad.
I am behind. I do I feel love like it. I'm behind.
That's great. Right. I love
to
it.
Your point, Grace. Yeah, that is like, I love that that's where we are in society now where it's like, oh, I never watched it. It's like, no, I'm still catching up.
I'm
like,
still catching up. There's a lot of TV.
It's so aspirational and, yes. And sweet and wonderful. It's we're very it's very you know, TV and movie inclusive. It's yeah. Like it's never off the table.
Yeah, it's
you never
I
know.
It.
I might get to it one day.
I just haven't got to it. Yeah, I love that.
But it's true though, and there's like a lot of those things for me, and so I kind of need to make like a list because like another list that I'm making, and I don't know if I'll end up doing this one, but it is there. Is all the Marvel Universe? I have no idea about that, and I feel like I need to be educated on that because I don't want people like it's a Marvel movie, it's a DC. I'm like, I actually
personally I'm trying to catch up just on the news. It's taking forever. Just like I'm at like 1982. I'm just like watching the news in chronological order.
Oh, terrible.
He said the newts. I'm like, what newts? Like what are newts?
No, the news. I'm just watching the news in chronological order. I'm no spoilers, please. But I am many seasons behind.
I know. It's
years.
Too much.
Years.
But yeah, Chantel, what else do you have going on? Where can people find you, follow you, all that stuff?
Gotcha. So on Instagram, you can find me at ShanFranFran, which has all my other socials on it. And then on YouTube, I have a channel. It's called Reality Realness with 3 S's. And fun is that Danny McRae from the Challenge USA is going to do a deep dive of his season with me and my gang over at Reality Realness. So that will be Monday. So this coming Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern, we will be talking to Danny McRae.
Wow.
So that's something so fun that's cool. Happening for me. Yes.
Hey. That's awesome. Grace, what about you?
Lots of things. House of the Dragon, talked a lot about that. Sorry.
Should I watch it and just jump and like,
do you know what?
I would say you absolutely can. Like, I don't even mean it in the sense of like, you know, say like save yourself the time or anything like that. I think genuinely there is something to be gained from just jumping into it and feeling out for yourself whether it's something you're interested in going forward, because it's like halfway through the first season now, and you know, ostensibly it's going to be around for a while if it continues to be this successful. So
it got renewed already. So you know.
You should just watch it, and then maybe you'll decide, oh, I hate this, and then you'll just
I won't hate it.
I won't hate it.
Well, you know how I am, Grace, with like with Euphoria. You know, like you're like, oh, do you want to come on and do something for season two? And I was like, yeah, but I have to go and watch. And I just sat for a Saturday and I watched the entire first season. So it's just kind of what I do. And so, yeah, sorry to cut you off, but maybe I'll dive into House of Dragons before catching up on Game of Thrones.
And The Sopranos. House of the Dragon, every Sunday night, Mike Bloom and I get on a podcast about 15 minutes after the episode ends, recap it as best we can, and then get it out in your feeds typically about Monday morning. There's lots more podcasts. Ariel joined us last week, actually joined Josh and I. Mike and Josh played Swapsies, and they switched podcasts for the week, so Josh came on. It was very fun. Over on Reality TV, where Hap-Ups cover sports with the Off-Speed podcast, and we have a new show over there on Rob as a Podcast on the YouTube and Twitch streams, which will be Roll Call, which is a board game show. A group of podcasters will join me to play a different board game every month. So, very exciting. We have one coming. I just dropped the date, October 1st. Look out. It's a Saturday. Look out for a little afternoon board gaming over on the Twitch and YouTube streams. So, I'm on Twitter at Hi From Grace. What about you, Ariel?
I am also on Twitter at that other Ariel. I am right now going through the White Lotus season one rewatch with Dr. Amanda here on Post Show Recaps. We don't really know when season two is coming. We know it's October. We're thinking it's going to be right after House of the Dragon. It'll take that like Sunday HBO slot over. But right now we're focusing on season one. We're having fun guests. We had Rob Cesternino on last week, and we're going to have Naomi on next week, who actually interviewed Mike White for her own podcast weeks ago, I believe. And yeah, we're having a lot of fun with that. I'm really hoping season two is as good. No pressure. I think that's...
Can we say what we're doing next week? It's very fun. I think we dropped it already.
Oh,
we said it.
The clue?
We did. I named the movie. I don't think that we said we were doing it, but I did reference the movie we're going to be covering next week. Oh. A lot of buzz. Movie's getting bad reviews. So they've blown up the media scrum. There's a lot of hot takes, spit takes about this movie. Don't worry, darling. We'll see you next week. Yeah.
Don't worry, darling is giving us a lot of reason to worry, my darlings. So that is all we'll say. But yes, this has been super fun. Chantel, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me. Fun.
Yeah, so we'll be back for Don't Worry, Darling next week. I am Ariel. That's Grace. We are Pusher Recap Theater. And we will be back soon. Bye-bye.